Now, welcome back to Coast with our guest this hour, Larry Pratt. We're talking about the Second Amendment, of course, a couple of his works on the firing line, Armed the People Victorious. And we're going to take your phone calls, your stories, whether you're pro or con guns, doesn't matter. You make the call. Welcome back to Coast, Larry Pratt with us. Larry, of course, spokesperson and executive director of the Gun Owners of America. Larry, in a perfect world, if you could do whatever you wanted to do with gun laws, what would you do? How would you structure it?
One of the first things that I would go after would be the elimination of gun-free zones. This is the law that has been responsible for the all but one of the places where mass murders have taken place in our country. They clearly are extremely deadly and counterproductive. The unintended consequences are extreme. So that would be the place to start. We would then be changing the whole dynamic of the discussion. I was interviewed after the Charleston church shooting by some folks in Britain, and they were just assuming that, well, surely now I must be changing my views about the Second Amendment and people having guns. And I said, I was kind of hoping that you all might be changing your views about gun-free zones, because it was the church was a gun-free zone by law and didn't do much good except for the shooter.
Right. Was it clearly known that the church was a gun-free? I mean, did they have one of those X's, you know, those slash things on the front or anything like that?
That I don't know, but the way the law is written in South Carolina is that it's the church leadership's call, and that particular pastor was a prominent anti-Second Amendment vote in the South Carolina State Senate. So I think it would be reasonably clear to somebody that, yeah, that would be a place that even if you didn't see the no guns sign, the pastor would have exercised that option that he had the power to do in state law to say, my church is a gun-free zone.
A gun-free zone will only prohibit the good guy or the good woman from carrying a gun into a place. The criminal or the murderer will still do it.
As they do time and again, it is a very sad. There have been so many lives lost in these gun-free zones. You would hope that we've come to the point, and maybe we are. I really think that the opinion among many of our fellow Americans is changing, and they're seeing the futility of gun control, that it hasn't kept guns out of the bad guys' hands. And so instead of discouraging the ability to get a gun, we should make it easier for the good guys to get a gun, because the bad guys are getting them no matter what we do.
Well, it's interesting, like even in a bank, which is generally a gun-free zone, the robber who is going to rob a bank with a gun doesn't care what that gun-free zone says. He's going to go in there, and he's going to have a gun.
He may be the first one to go down.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right, because the perpetrator knows exactly who to shoot, the guy's in uniform, and he's a perfect target.
Unhappily, that's true, and that would be the same in schools that adopt an armed guard, a cop, say, that's off duty or something like that. It's not as easy as some of the anti-gunners think, that they can just bring a policeman along and then all their troubles are over.
All right, we're going to take some phone calls now. Whether you're pro-gun, against gun, doesn't matter. I want your calls and your stories. If you were involved in a gun-related episode, you might want to share that with us, too. Let's go to Studio City, California to start. Jim's with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Jim. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. First off, I wanted to ask our guest tonight. I had a friend from Australia who told me they made guns illegal there around 2000, and that the next year, hot burglaries, meaning people are in their home in the middle of the night sleeping, went up the next year, as well as rape and violent crime with guns, because bad guys still had them. And the crime rate went up the following year and year after when guns were made illegal. And then in addition to that, I wanted to mention that twice in my life, my house has been burglarized here in Los Angeles. The first time the neighbor, as I pulled up, said, "Your house is being robbed." I did not have a gun. As I went to the front door and opened it with the key, the burglar attacked me, and we fought and fought, and I choked him and held him as the neighbors in the front yard stood around and did nothing from 50 feet away except call the police. And there was nothing I could do. I luckily got the best of them. The second time I came home, my girlfriend and I, years later, pulled up to the front, walked along the side of the house, and the door was broken open with a duffel bag. A man came out. I started choking, and I yelled to her, "Go to my car, get my gun." I had no gun. She was smart enough to stand 20 feet away in the dark and say, "If you move, I'll blow your head off. Don't move." And the guy stood and did not move as we fought in the backyard until the police came. My life was saved by even threatening that I had a gun when we had no gun. The police arrived. He had an 8-inch blade in a sheath at his hip. He could have pulled it on me and killed me. That's all I have to say. So even though I don't own a gun, it saved my life.
Interesting takes. Go ahead, Larry. I'll let you react to that. Jim, thanks for your call.
Well, that's a remarkable story, and hopefully of a gun will end sometime soon, because that's kind of pushing your luck that you can bluff it the way you have. Very clever, and my hat's off to you, and I'm delighted the way it turned out, but I didn't think I would be comfortable trying that too many more times, and it sounds like you live in a neighborhood where it could happen again.
Australia, of course, the crime did go down. The crime did go up after they banned guns, did it not?
It did, and the most severe of them was armed robbery, because the robber figured there, well, I'm going to have a monopoly, so I'll just flash my gun, and they're going to put the money right in my bag, which is what happened.
Let's go to Charles now in Arizona. Welcome to the program, Charles. You are up with us.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Noor, Mr. Pratt. Thank you for taking
Charles.
My call.
Sure thing, sir.
Unfortunately, I have been forced myself on several occasions to use my firearm to prevent a crime. And there is a huge difference between threatening lethal force opposed to using it. And fortunately, I was able to make do with just the threat of lethal force. I'll only cover two quick ones. And the first time was in Flagstaff, and the gentleman, he was on a number of these psychotropic drugs, and I knew that things were getting hairy, and I had a recorder going when he came to my house. And everything was fine at first, and then he started getting strange. And for all these people that say, "Oh, well, pepper spray," but that might be fine, but you better have Plan B ready, because it only stops.
If he's on drugs, the pepper spray may not have much effect.
Oh no, no! Yeah, like I said, the next thing I knew, I ended on the floor. In an area where I could not free myself, with his hands around my neck, telling me how he was going to kill me. And, of course, I fought back as well as I could, you know, one hand around my neck and the other one pounding my face. And I was able to bend his fingers back. I don't know why they didn't break, but... it was enough to get him off me, and I had a 12-gauge shotgun by my bed, and I presented that, and I told him that he had 3 seconds to go off the door. And
wow, you were even prepared to let him go, huh?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I didn't want to kill him, but if
he
would have
made it outside in 2 seconds,
towards me, I would have discharged the weapon. Like I say, I had a recorder going, and actually that saved me. I played it for the police. And he asked me all kinds of questions. You know, was it loaded? Was it cocked? You know, was your finger on the trigger? And I said, well, yes, I would have shot him. You know, he would have taken one step towards me. But he went out the door, and... that was the end of that. The other one that I want to bring up is down here in Topoc. I was letting a guy stay on my property, and he wasn't on any drugs, but he was just plain psychotic. And it's hard to believe, but what set him off was he could not light the barbecue, and so he started shooting everything up with a 12-gauge shotgun.
Jeez.
Heck, there's a 3-inch hole in my front door. And I would have, that's usually where I read, was right behind where that door was.
Man, you were lucky that day. Wow.
Oh, yeah. This went on for 2.5 hours, George.
Jeez.
Fortunately, I had a Kevlar helmet and a Kevlar vest. I was a jeweler for many years, and I just hunkered down between my safe and the bathtub and waited while he made holes in my trailer.
Did you try calling the cops at all, Charles, while this was happening?
I had no phone.
Nothing.
No,
what a desperate feeling that would have been.
it was the longest 2.5 hours of my life.
Oh, I can believe that. And nobody came to your aid or defense?
No, I'm rural. I'm rural.
I mean, nobody around you at all, huh?
No. And the only thing, I'll tell you what saved me, was he knew that I was armed. And he did make one attempt to come in the door, and there must have been one brain cell left in his head that said, no, he has
just enough to save his hide. Hey, thanks, Charles, for that story. Larry, it brings up a question, though, about the psychotic person, the person who, let's say, is okay to buy a gun and then years later flips out for some reason, but he still has the gun. What do we do about that?
Make sure that if he's going to actually try to use it illegally, that we can protect ourselves from him. Because the only other way to deal with a guy like that would be to disarm the whole population. If you don't know who's going to, you know, he doesn't come with a tag on him that says, when I reach age 50, I'm going to go bonkers, then we just have to give people the benefit of the doubt, innocent until they prove themselves guilty. And then if they go off, then hopefully we're going to be prepared.
We're with Larry Pratt. He's the executive director of the Gun Owners of America. Larry, a few people have sent me emails. They think you're a little insensitive about those poor people who died in the church in Charleston, South Carolina. I wanted to give you an opportunity to respond to them.
Well, I'm sorry if I gave the impression that it wasn't important to me. I think it was dreadful. And the thing that makes it even more grievous is that arguably it might have been ameliorated or avoided altogether had they been able to defend themselves, but they weren't. And for a dirtbag to come in and take advantage of people who were doing something nothing more threatening than a Bible study is kind of the height of evil. And the guy that that nailed them is evil, and I hope, as the governor of the state said, he gets the death penalty.
You know what? I hope he does, too. And I've got to tell you, I wish I could have the strength of the family members of the people who died who said they forgive him. I can't do that.
I saw that one guy's testimony forgiving the dirtbag, and I thought, that is a real solid Christian guy. What a testimony. He's walking the talk.
Yeah, he really is. I could not do that. I don't know if that makes me defective or what, but, you know,
we're
I come...
all defective. It just depends on in what way.
I come from that old...
Not defective in that way.
I come from that old military background of protect, and I wouldn't. Let's go back for some more calls here. Let's go to Corey in Cincinnati, Ohio, east of the Rockies while we have some time. Go ahead, Corey.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Well, I've been shooting my whole life. hell, since I was 8 years old, 33 now. My whole family's been carrying guns their whole lives. Since Ohio had concealed carry, my parents and I, we all got concealed carry, but recently my dad stopped carrying a gun because of the consequences of using that gun. He doesn't want to take a chance of going to prison his whole life. You know, he actually started sleeping with a machete next to the bed instead of a gun.
Jeez.
I just don't understand how, you know, a law-abiding citizen trying to protect themselves, you know, can go through something like that, not being able to protect themselves and worry about going to prison.
Well, what happens there, Corey, go ahead, Larry, but what happens in episodes like that, if you're involved in a shooting, the prosecution is going to look at you. You might get charged. You got to be very, very sure if you're going to pull that gun and use it. You don't have the same rights as a police officer who still has a problem if he uses his gun. Am I correct, Larry?
That's very often the case, indeed. And in fact, there are some states that you, if at all possible, should just avoid. One of them is New Jersey. There's a gal by the name of Shanine Allen. I've recently interviewed her on my weekly program. She, single mom, couple boys, closing a convenience store like 2 in the morning or maybe even later, and she was looking twice in a month, looking at the wrong end of a gun. And she decided, I'm in Pennsylvania, I'm going to get a concealed carry permit. And she did. Now, bless her heart, what she didn't realize is that was only good for Pennsylvania. It wasn't like our driver's license, which you get it in Pennsylvania, but you can drive in the whole country. So she was driving in New Jersey, and she knows she was not speeding because she was very tired. She was driving late at night. And somehow she got pulled over. My suspicion is that the officer ran her plates and found out through the Pennsylvania database that she had a concealed carry permit. So he pulled her over, and she volunteered that she had a gun in the car. And she spent the next 48 days in jail as a result of that. She was ultimately exonerated. The governor completely cleared her record, but she went through 2 years of being unemployable as a medical technician, which is her field, because of the record that she had from not even a conviction, just the arrest. It was enough to just keep employers afraid for themselves if they took her on. For having a gun to protect herself as a single mom, that is pretty vicious. And the prosecutor that did that could have dropped the charges, or he not even brought them. There were ultimately 2 cops, state police, involved in the episode, in the arrest. One of them was telling the other officer, look, we ought to just drop this. But so there was just enough people with a vicious streak in them. They're going to stick at the gun owners. They're going to teach.
They keep doing it. Larry, we're going to come back and take some final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, last week, the numbers lady, Glynis McKentz, who writes a blog for our paranormaldate.com website, sent me an email. She was all excited. She said, George, you're not going to believe this, but Seth Meyers from Late Night on NBC, he's the one who replaced Jimmy Fallon, is talking about Paranormal Date. He's all over the thing in his monologue. This is amazing. And she just went on and on and on. I haven't had a chance to see it. I was on the air that moment. But I did get a few emails in from people, too, who had heard it, and it was something else. And that's it. That's our website for those of you who want to connect with other people, paranormaldate.com. It's simple as that, paranormaldate.com. Free to sign up. Use my code name, George, if you decide to stick around and stay on it for any length of time and connect with people. And we're going to announce next week that we're going to start taking your pictures from your dates, because some of you are starting to go on dates already. So get them to us, and we'll put them up on our Twitter feed, if you would. ParanormalDate.com. Okay, welcome back. Our final segment with Larry Pratt. He's the executive director of Gun Owners of America. Larry, earlier on, I said I would ask you some questions from the perspective of people who are not in favor of guns. And I'm going to do that with this question now. And using the sad Charleston, South Carolina case, of course, and the sick individual, the demented young 21-year-old who did this despicable act. If guns, and this is the question for you, if guns were totally banned in this country, would sickos like this individual who got the money to buy a gun from his dad for his birthday and went out and legally bought the gun, if guns were all banned, you can't buy them, I can't buy them, because we're law-abiding people, and the sicko kid couldn't buy them, will that stop the crimes?
Well, of course, that's an impossible hypothetical, because we know that there have been efforts to ban guns totally, and they've been extremely unsuccessful. Washington, D.C., Chicago, you name it, they have failed. Now, let's just carry on with the hypothetical.
Sure.
The what if. That means then that any guy who's a really big guy and comes up to me, who's an older, average build sort of guy, he's going to be able to dominate me, and I have no way to back him off.
That's true.
So I think even a knife means I got to get in real close, and he has the opportunity to move faster than my hand and arm. There's no way he's going to move faster than my gun and its bullet. So I think it's an equalizer that the question really would take away from people like me, most women, and put the world into the hands of the bruisers and the thugs.
Let me ask you this hypothetical again, too, then. If in a perfect world there was not, it's impossible, by the way, but if in a perfect world there was no crime, there were no robberies, there were no thugs to try to beat you up, would you need a gun in a perfect world?
No, you'd be in a place called heaven.
Exactly. However, this is not a perfect world. So the next thought is this the lesser of, I don't want to say the lesser of two evils, but that's the only thing I can think of right now. And
well,
that is
less extreme, because the most extreme would be for most of us to be subservient to the thugs and the punks that have no scruples and have the physical ability to carry out pretty ugly stuff. The fact that the presentation of a gun, in fact, one of the callers mentioned, when I presented my gun, and he used that word, present arms, indeed, the situation de-escalated. He didn't even have to fire a shot. And I think that's what a lot of people are not thinking about, because in the movies, things are always being shot. Guns are always being shot. People are falling over. Of course, they get up right away in the movies, not in real life.
But, not in real life.
The fact of the matter is that bad guys, unless they're crazy out on their head on drugs, are going to back off when they see that you have a gun. And if they don't, well, that's what you have a trigger for.
Let's go to some more calls. Let's go to Janet in Chicago. Welcome to the program, Janet. You're on the air with us.
Okay, I just want to say that it's interesting how you guys use selective statistics to back your argument. Now, I have law enforcement in my family, so I see both sides, and I'm not against guns, but
okay,
reasonable reform, et cetera, for people who own guns, I don't think that's too much to ask. Now,
Janet, let me ask you, though, what kind of reasonable reform would that be? Because I'm not opposed to that either.
Just the fact of maybe letting people, maybe registering. Everyone who has a gun knows. Because quite frankly, if the government was to ever turn on its people, guess what? We're outgunned anyway, okay? So the fact that the government knows that you have a gun and how many guns you have is immaterial. But just so you know, this gun is at this person's house, so if the house was broken in and someone took it or something like that, it could be traced to who mm-hmm. has the gun or things like that, as opposed to some places you could walk up to gun shows and anybody can come up and buy a gun, don't check to see if you just came out of a psych ward. Something is wrong with that, okay? Mm-hmm. And it borders from state to state.
Larry, what do you think of that? Because, one, you got to go through a background check and register if you buy your gun from a gun store. What's happening at guns, you know, sales and conventions and things like that?
Yeah, you can buy a gun from your next-door neighbor, and in most states, that's just a private transaction. I think the idea that registration is going to reduce crime has been found wanting in those places where it has been done. In fact, New York City and in Cleveland, they did have people register. They didn't have crime rates that were what they were looking for, and the city fathers, now we're talking many years ago, but they decided that, well, then, since there's all this crime going on, we'll just confiscate the guns. And they knew where the guns were to confiscate. They broke their word. They said they would never do that, and they ended up doing it.
Next up, we go to Tom in Riverside, California now. Thomas, you're up with us.
Yeah, I'd like to say a couple things about the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I don't know what it means to you all. As I grew up in the 60s, I'm about the same age as you, George, and I watched Kennedy being shot over and over and over again for 3 days until he was buried. And I think about what's happened. I got common sense. I think we're fools if we try to pacify these people that want these gun laws. Our country clearly states its position. It's the Second Amendment to the Constitution. It's in stone as long as this country's here. And if people don't like it, then they need to go somewhere else. That's all. And many people have died for that right. And I don't think it should be restricted, not even to people that have went to prison or anything else. I'm just the opposite on some of the callers. I think that it should be wide open. And as ironic as it sounds, that may go a long ways towards stopping a lot of the crime. Because people are not apt to do that. And the ones that are, they ain't going to be around long. You know what I mean? The people who want trouble are going to find it, and they're not going to be here long. And one other thing I wanted to ask Larry about, we talk about the guns, but like I said, it's ironic. You're bringing up the British saying that they're appalled by what's going on. And there's a very reason that there is a Second Amendment, that the forefathers specifically made it the Second Amendment, because they marched on Lexington to take guns, to take the catches of arms that we had, and Concord. And that's why it's there. I never thought it that I would like to say something to the audience. Growing up in the 60s, I never thought that the Second Amendment was to go hunting, which I did a lot. My father was brought up in a gun environment. The idea was don't trust authority. That was the ringing thing that our whole generation grew up in the 60s. Don't trust authority. And the Second Amendment is there for that very reason. The self-protection is kind of an afterthought, but the first and foremost thing is that the government can be overthrown by the people. That was the idea.
Well, and I'm convinced, Tom, I'm convinced, as you are, that one of the reasons we haven't been toppled within is because people have guns. I think, Larry, that some nations have probably looked at the United States and say, every person out there is a potential soldier. We can't do this. We can't invade them. What do you think?
Reputedly, I'm not totally sure of its authenticity, a Japanese admiral said that that's why the Japanese decided not to invade the United States mainland, because there'd be a rifle pointing at them from behind every tree and rock. That is at least plausible, and maybe it's an apocryphal quote, because after Pearl Harbor, they had a land invasion, well, from the sea. They had some ships bring in some soldiers to invade the Hawaiian Islands. They were repulsed by the armed Hawaiian citizenry.
That's right.
And so it's at least plausible that that admiral really did say that there would be a gun behind every rock and tree, because that's what he found in Hawaii.
Of the great number of murders in the United States every year, how many do you think, I don't know if we have statistics, maybe we do, how many are committed by people with illegal guns, not legally owned? What do you think?
There is some of that. And honestly, I'm not sure I've ever seen any attempt to sort that out.
Yeah, I would love to see that statistic.
Guns can be purchased legally, and they can be transferred privately and legally. And then there's no real paper trail on those guns. They're legally owned until they're illegally used.
See, I would not, the guns I own, I would never sell it privately to somebody because, you know, aren't I on the hook if that gun's found somewhere?
If you bought it on record.
If I bought it on record through a gun store and then I sold it to somebody else, or gave it to them, and that person went out and committed a crime and a murder, and that gun was discovered.
I bought a gun privately from a guy one time, and he got a signed statement from me that I was buying the gun from him. And I thought was a pretty good idea. It's not an official document, but it was my signature, and he had co-signed or countersigned it. And so there would be a way to avoid probably the problem that you're pointing to.
He would basically turn in that letter to law enforcement and say, hey, I sold the gun to Larry Pratt. Here's paperwork.
Here's his signature.
You better investigate him. That would probably help. That's probably pretty smart.
There are ways to do that, and yet it does remain private until there is a misuse of the gun, in which case then the guy that has that document comes forth. But otherwise, both of us would go to our grave, and only the two of us would know about the purchase of that gun.
Michael is in Edinburgh, Texas. I'll be out there in a few months at an event. Michael, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Yes, George. It's such an honor, George. Let me calm down. This is very nervous for me.
Okay.
I've been listening to you since I was 13. George, imagine all the free education you've given me since I was 13.
You've got a PhD now, Michael, just by listening to the program.
Oh yes, and that's very true. That's very true. That's very true. Okay.
Well, I'm honored to be talking to a doctor.
You got it.
I'm a call center agent, actually, and I talk to a lot of people out there, and where education is a very big problem, George. Education is an extremely big problem.
Customer service
agent, and I talk to everybody around the country, and we need to remember that education is the root of all the problems, and education it starts at a very young age, and the neurology suggests to us that the mind isn't fully developed until, 23, 24? And the boy was 21. People think 21 is an adult. 21 is not an adult, George.
No, not for everything.
Not for everything, but the majority. The majority. We need to think about this, guys, the world, that this is a very big problem, is our education, child development. I'm a substitute teacher. I've been going to a school now for that. And education is a very big problem. Our children are our future.
Well, and here's something else, Michael. You're right about that. But Larry, if these kids, most of whom have committed these atrocities, weren't on medication, mind-altering drugs, most of these problems would be minimized.
Almost all of these mass murders have been committed by people who either were on at the time or had just come off of mind-altering drugs. It's a serious problem, and one of my guests on my weekly show was a psychologist, Linda Lagerman, who pointed out that the psychiatric use of these drugs ends up, even most of the time, the first use of the drug alters the mind. And it's very difficult then to deal with people who we've diddled with their mind. And Ritalin, by the way, is so pervasively used in our schools to calm students down rather than using the Board of Education, if you get my drift. That calmed me down for sure when I was full of hormones and a lot of excess energy. But now we give them drugs. And, you know, I got over my sore backside, but it's a little harder to get over a permanently altered brain.
That's exactly right. And I think with the era of social networking, that people have an obligation now. If they see, hear their friends say whacked out things like, I'm going to shoot up a school, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go into a church and kill people, I think they're culpable too, Larry, if they don't say anything to law enforcement.
If they really think that it's credible, imagine the dirtbag that shot up the church in Charleston had actually been at some kind of, I guess it was a bar, the night before, saying exactly what he was going to do.
Exactly.
He was going to go shoot up a place. It turned out that place had too many cops, so he went to the church where he didn't find any visible
resistance.
Opposition.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. He was actually saying what he was going to do. But if I were sitting with a few drinks and the other guy was a few drinks and I didn't know the guy from Adam, and he's talking like that, I'm thinking, he's had too many drinks.
But you know what? But it's still, Larry, people are whacked out if they talk like that, and I think they need to be reported. Law enforcement needs to react to that. And then you investigate and find out what's going on. You find the manifestos. Larry, thank you. Larry's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, one of the most incredible UFO cases ever. I'll be back.